Good morning. Today's daf in the Nedarim is Pei Vav. We are starting today on the bottom of Pei Hei Amud Beis. We're starting with the words Amar Rav Huna. Start with the bottom. Amar Rav Huna, Breeder of Yehoshua. We're answering up Akasha, so let's get involved. Today, we're going to be dealing with one topic and one topic only, and that is Davar Shelo Bo La'olam. Can a person be Makdish Davar Shelo Bo La'olam? So something that's not currently here right now, or it's here, but not within your possession. And can you affect any kind of change in that item? Can you make a transaction in that item? Can you render that item hektish? So this takes us to a broad topic that we discussed again and again throughout Shas, and that is whether or not a person can be makdish davar shelo bo la'olam, or no. Alternatively, no. A person cannot be makdish davar shelo bo la'olam. Now, the idea actually is pretty simple, in that right now, currently, the item is either physically not here, or physically here, but transactionally not in your possession. And so you have no authority over the item. And can you make any kind of change in that item? Can you render any kind of status change in that item, either by performing a transaction with that item or making it hektish currently right now as the item is not here? So as we know, it's a machlokes satanayim. So throughout Shas, again and again, we're going to hear time and again in today's daf. Yesterday in today's daf happens to be one of the primary sources of this topic of discussion, in terms of whether or not a person can or cannot be makdish davar shelo bo la'olam. So traditionally, here's how the sides lay out, and that is you have on one side Shitas Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that a person adam makdish davar shelo bo la'olam, that you can create hekdesh for something that is not currently here. So even though the item is not here, and again, when I say the item is not here, either it's physically not yet in the world, right? In other words, we're growing fruit, but the fruit's not here yet. And I want to be makdish the fruit, but after they come into this world. That's a classic example of a davar shelo bo la'olam. Or, alternatively, the fruit's here, but I don't own it. And now I say that, right now I don't own the fruit, but when I purchase the fruit, they're going to become hektesh, and I'm trying to do that right now. So whether or not it works, so again, so Reb Meir's of the position, it works. A person can be makdish davar shelo bo la'olam. And on the other side of that, you have basically all the other tanaim. So most of the positions throughout Shas is that in adam makdish davar shelo bo la'olam, you can't. You can't be makdish it if it's not yet here. Okay. So this is a major machlokus amongst the Tanayim. So good. So we're not, in other words, that the machlokus is going to stand, right? It's a machlokus l'shem shamayim. So it's going to live on in perpetuity. What we have been discussing yesterday and today is where does Shmuel stand on this topic? So Shmuel's confusing us. Not deliberately, but Shmuel confuses us. Why? Because he seems to be taking two positions that seem to be disparate. On one hand, Shmuel follows like Rav Yochanan Nuri of our Mishnah. So we go back to yesterday's daf, and on the Amud Aleph of yesterday, we learned the Mishnah. When a woman says that Eini Osal Picha, that you see my Maisei Adayim, anything that I will produce, so I'm going to render that now usur to you. In other words, I'm making a neder on my Maisei Yadayim to you. That is what the wife says to the husband. Okay? State of the marriage right now seems to be in a bit of a disarray, but that's not, right? That's not what we're going to comment on. What we're going to comment on is, does the neder take effect? So in the Mishnah, there are not one, not two, but three different opinions on the matter. And for, as far as we're concerned right now, we just need to focus on the sheet of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. That was the last sheet of the Mishnah. And Rav Yochanan ben Nuri says, Yafer. That what you have to do is you have to be Mefer. Meaning the husband has to be Mefer such an editor. Why? Because it will take effect. If I can reread the words of the Mishnah, Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, Omer Yafer, Shema Yigarshena, Vati Asura Love. Because what's going to happen is that Shema Yigarshena, he may divorce her. And what then is going to happen is that the neder is going to take effect. So in other words, because of the future, where she will be in possession of her Maisei Yadayim, so therefore what he should do is he should be Mefer. So, her neder that her Maisei Yadayim are going to be Aser, which doesn't take effect now, but which will take place at a later point in time, after divorce. So that is an example of a davar shelo bo la'olam. And Rav Yochanan ben Nuri said in the Mishnah that the husband has to be Mefer, because it will take effect. So it sounds like Rav Yochanan Nuri subscribes to the position of Adam Makdish Davar Shelo Bo La'olam, which again is fine, because there are Tanaim who subscribe to that, and Shmuel paskins like Rav Yochanan Nuri, which now takes us that Shmuel holds that a person is Makdish Davar Shelo Bo La'olam. However, I say that, and then what confused us is another psak of Shmuel. And that is the following, Makdish Masi Yedei Ishto, that in a brisa that we quoted yesterday, so this brisa is found in Ksuvos, so a person is Makdish Masi Yedeim of his wife. In other words, in our Mishnah, she's the one making the neder. In the brisa in Ksuvos, he's the one, he's not making a neder, but he's simply being Makdish, right? The production of my wife, so that should be, it belongs to Hekdesh. So what's the halacha? So the halacha is that we saw on yesterday's daf. So first of all, as far as the base amount is concerned, he is not going to be makdish because it doesn't belong to him; it belongs to her. And as we pointed out yesterday, meaning the easiest way to explain it is aliba de Rav Huna. According to Rav Huna, what a woman can do is that she can retain her maisi adayim. And and as far as the mezonos is concerned, she could tell the husband, you keep your mezonos, I'll keep my maisi adayim. So therefore, the maisi adayim don't belong to the husband, and therefore he can't be makdishit. Okay, that's the easiest way to say it over. But that's not the part that we're interested in. The part that we're interested in is the next part of the brisa, and that is hamosar. But what about anything above and beyond the base amount? Right, the base amount is 5 salayim. Again, that doesn't mean anything to us, but all we need to know is that there is a base amount of maisi adayim. Anything above and beyond that, that's going to go to the husband. So the hamosar, Rabbi Meir Amar Hektish, Rabbi Yochanan Sandler Amar Chulin. And so here we have a machlokus between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yochanan Sandler. Rabbi Yochanan Sandler says that the mosar is going to be Chulin. And Shmuel says the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan Sandler. Why? Because when he's being makdishit, it's currently right now not here. It will be here, but it's not currently here. What is that an example of? A davar shelo bala olam. And according to Rav Yochanan HaSandler, you can't be makdish something that's not currently here yet. And Shmuel Paskin's like Rav Yochanan HaSandler. Okay, so the confusion lies in the fact that Shmuel's giving us mixed messages. On one hand, in our Mishnah, Shmuel Paskin's like Rav Yochanan Ben Nuri, who's of the position that Adam Makdish Shavah Shalab Al-Olam. In other words, she's making a neder on her Maisi Adayim, and he has to be Mefer, because if he's not going to be Mefer, it's going to take effect when? At a future point in time. That's Adam Makdish Shavah Shalab Al-Olam. Shmuel says, I'm with Rav Yochanan Ben Nuri. And then, in what is a very similar circumstance, but flip the person who's doing the Hekdesh, the husband's being Makdish, the Maisi Adayim of his wife, and Rav Yochanan HaSandler is of the position that it's not Hekdesh. Why? Because it's a davar shelo bala olam. And Shmuel says, and I'm with Rav Yochanan HaSandler, that in Adam Makdish davar shelo bala olam. Okay, so we framed the question yesterday, and yesterday we tried to give some answers. So we are right now a little bit caught in terms of where we stand regarding Rav Yochanan. I'm sorry, where we stand regarding Shmuel. Does he hold on the Makdish Tavar Shelo Bala Olam, or does he hold the alternative? And because he passes like Rav Yochanan Ben Nuri in our Mishnah, and he passes like Rav Yochanan Sandler in Ksuvas, so now it's confusing. And so what we're going to be doing for the entirety of today's daf, right? I'm going to stop at the Mishnah on the Amud Beis. So what we're going to do with the entirety of today's daf is that we're going to try to say a pshat within Shmuel. What does he hold? And obviously, if we're going to pin him to one position, so how can he paskin like both? That's the entire objective for today. It's a really straightforward day. And after I say that, the daf is a little bit complicated. But in other words, in terms of our objective of what we're trying to do today, it's clear. So let's pick it up. So yesterday, the Gemara tried to give a couple of answers. If you may, go back to yesterday's daf, right? Play yesterday's daf again, right? Go over yesterday's answers in terms of what we suggested yesterday. Today, we're going to try a new approach. So El Amar of Huna Bered Rav Yoshua. So we're picking it up now. We're on Pei Hei Amud Beis, and we're starting, I don't know, about 7 lines from the bottom. So El Amar of Huna Bered Rav Yoshua. So over here, in our Mishnah, what she's saying is that she is going to be asking her Maisi Yadayim because she's not talking about the production, that which my hands are making, but rather what she's being makdish are her actual hands. She's saying that these hands now are going to belong to Hekdesh. So Yikachi Yadai La'oseyem and Yadayim Isna Ba'olam. So in other words, by turning our Mishnah's discussion, not about what she produces, but rather about her hands are here currently. So the Gemara says, okay, fine. So the Gemara says, but I don't understand. So in other words, good. So now you've turned the discussion just a little bit, and we're not talking about the production, but rather we're talking about the hands. But the Gemara says, but still, I don't fully understand, because even as it stands that she is now being makdish her actual hands, but right now currently the husband's got a shebet on her hands. Okay. And so let's just explain this a little bit better right now, as we're going to be speaking a lot today about shibudim. Okay, so what does that mean? So when you have a shibud, it means the following. Okay. In other words, let's go over the classic distinction between guf and peros. In other words, when I own my car, for example, so Baruch Hashem, I'm in ownership of my car. So what does that mean? It means that I have the title to the car, I own the guf hadavar, and also all the usage of the car also belongs to me as well. So this is what's called guf and peros. So I own the car, I own its usage. Okay. So and right now, currently, nobody has any claims or rights to it. Good. So that is a classic, it's just a simple way of illustrating guf and peros. However, when it comes to a woman, while she is married, so on one hand, as it relates to the hands themselves, so she owns her hands. In other words, right, I understand we're talking about people, but in halacha, just like we talk about items and guf and peros, we could do the same thing when it comes to people as well. So when it comes to a person, owns a guf of their guf. If that makes sense. Okay, good. Which it should. In other words, they own the guf of their guf, right? The notable exception are going to be avadim, but outside of that, in other words, avadim, I'm talking about an evikanani. So what happens to the evikanani is that the guf of the evikanani is actually owned, and it's passed down from generation to generation. But outside of that, everybody owns their guf. A woman married is still in full ownership of her guf. She owns her guf. But what about the peros? In other words, when it comes to production, so the production, now that is going to be held by the husband. In other words, because they're married and because now there are contractual obligations, both min ha-Torah and min derabbanan, they're contractual obligations that go in both directions, from wife to husband, from husband to wife. So therefore, now the husband now is in ownership of the peros, and specifically are ma'asei yadayim, which means that the yadayim are meshubah to the husband. So. And again, when we say the yadayim are meshubah to the husband, so the guf of the yadayim belong to her, but the peros of the yadayim belong to the husband, so he now has a shibud. He has, so to say, a lien on those hands. As such, so the Gemara says, so I'm not fully following. So she is now saying, I'm not being makdish my productivity, but I'm being makdish my yadayim. The Gemara says, that's great. So v'hamashabdin yadelabal. So the amr l'chi megarsha. So the Gemara says, okay, so what we're going to say is as follows. Right, you're right. In other words, currently, right now, in her current state, she can't be makdish her hands. Why? Because although she owns the guf of the hands, but she doesn't own the peros. The peros of the hand belong to the husband. That part's true. However, what she is saying is that I'm being makdish my yadayim now, that when I retain rights of them, meaning post-divorce, so then they're going to belong to Hekdesh. So what just happened over here in the Gemara? So we solved, and we created a problem simultaneously. Okay, good. In other words, she can't be makdish her productivity. They belong to the husband. The Gemara says, she's being makdish her hands. Oh, okay. But meanwhile, he's got a shibud on that. So the Gemara says, yeah, but for the future. So what did we just do? We just backed right back into the discussion of whether a person is makdish davar shelo b'olam. Meaning currently, right now, she's not the owner. She's not the possessor of those hands. She will be at a later point in time if in the event he divorces her. So now, it's a davar shelo b'olam. So where do we stand on that issue? So hashemi ala megarsha. So umimai dechi amar hachi mehanya. So the Gemara says, okay. Now as the Ron points out over here, if you subscribe to the viewpoint of adam makdish davar shelo b'olam, we're fine. Meaning, now we're perfectly fine. We're comfortable with this entire discussion. However, if what we're asserting and we're suggesting is that according to Shmuel, he's of the position that his default position is in adam makdish davar shelo b'olam. So how is all this helping us? Here's her statement. You see these hands over here? So I'm ostering them to my husband. In other words, I'm formulating an edder that these hands should be ostered to my husband. I currently has a shibud on them right now because I am required to produce for him. That part's true. I'm saying it for a future time. But a person in adam makdish davar shelo b'olam. So how does this work? And so what we're going to be doing is spending our first amud of today's daf trying to figure out Is there any world in which we could say that right now you own the goof, you don't own the peros? Can I, even if I subscribe to the viewpoint of ein adamakta shava shalom bala olam, can I effect hektish on them for a later point in time? That's what we're going to try to suggest. Now, as much as we're going to try, ultimately the Gemara is going to say, spoiler alert, the Gemara is going to say, no, you can't. If you're not in full ownership of an item, both in terms of guf and peros, so you can't affect hektish. Certainly not now, and not even at a later point in time when you do make acquisition of guf and peros. The answer is going to be no. But it's going to take an amud of Gemara, so please be patient, and I know the next lines of the Gemara, really the entirety of the Amud Aleph of today's daf, Pevav Amud Aleph, is the Gemara's attempt to try to suggest maybe there is a world in which you can affect, even if I hold Ein Adamakta Shava Shalom Bala Olam, there is a way to affect Hektish at a later point in time, maybe if I own some part of it. Okay. So the Gemara says like this, Umimai Dechi Amra Hachi Mahanya. So is their statement going to have any benefit whatsoever? Meaning, is it going to work? And the Gemara says, Amar Rav Ilai. So here's now, we're going to go about four or five rounds into this discussion. Here's round number one. So Amar Rav Ilai, Umay Ilu, Amar L'chaver, Sadezeh, Shani Mochalach, L'cheshe, Ekachena Mimcha, Taktish, Milo Kadisha. So let's start off with the following model. And that is, I currently own a field. And obviously what we're going to do now is that we're going to create a case, and we're going to try to make a comparison between the created case and the case of the woman. Okay, so here's the case that we're going to create. I'm currently in full ownership of the property. And that means currently right now I own guf and peros. I own title on the property and all usage of the property belong to me. And I make the following declaration. I'm going to be maktish the property, but not right now. In other words, here's how the events are going to unfold. I'm going to be maktish the property, but only after I sell it and after I buy it back, then I'm going to be makdish it. But in other words, but I'm effecting the hektesh. I'm making the hektesh now, but the effect will be at a later point in time, specifically after I sell and after I buy it back. Okay. Now, what's motivating this person? Please don't ask me. I have no idea. We don't care about motivation right now. We just simply care. Does it work? Will that be effective? Meaning, upon selling it and upon buying it back, does it now belong to Hektish? The answer is going to be yes. Why? Because when he made the statement to effect the Hektish, he was in full ownership. He owned Guf and he owned Peros. So even though it's for a later point in time, but when he made the statement, he could have done it right now. So therefore, his ability to do so right now allows him to put a delay in. And oddly enough, by the way, this is a part that really requires thought. Even though the delay is going to be taking us through a period of time in which he's no longer the owner. But he says that when he buys it back, it's going to belong to Hektish. Okay. Now, that's already a lot to wrap our heads around, meaning why it should work, but it does. It does work. And the Ron writes over here, and how did Rav Ilai know that? So the Ron says, because it makes sense. Now, I say that, by the way, as if it's like so obvious. Of course it makes sense. Okay, that's how the Ron sets it up. It simply is misvara. It makes sense. Now, assuming this is correct, and Ravila obviously assumes that this is correct, how is that any different than the case of the woman? Meaning, in the case of the woman, what is she saying? You see my yadayim right now? So my yadayim right now, I'm going to be maktish. Right now, somebody has a shibud on my yadayim, otherwise known as my husband. Okay, fine. So, in other words, it's not for now, it's for later. Meaning, after I get divorced, so now I'm going to be in full ownership of my hands, both guf and peros. Good comparison, right? Of course not. It's not a good comparison. And that's what the Gemara is now going to spell out. Uma ilo, I read that already. Maskevla Rav Yirmiya. So the Gemara says, okay, challenge on Rav Ila, midami. The cases are not comparable. So sadazushani mochalach hashta biyadehi. Isha biyadalakdish maisi adeha. So obviously the comparison falls apart and right at the beginning. Meaning in the case of the land of the property where I own the land in total, both guf and peros. So now when I own the land, so I could have done it right now. Nothing currently is impeding me from being makdishit. In the case of the woman, so yes, it's true. She owns her hands in terms of the guf hadavar. But she doesn't own the peros currently. So the comparison is not a good comparison. So she can't be makdish maisi adayim. So halodami elala omer. In fact, if you want to make a better comparison, the comparison more works more like this. After having sold you my property, which means it's no longer mine, and now the property belongs to somebody else, and I have nothing to do with the property, so now here's my declaration. So I'm going to be makdish the property. I don't own it right now. That's a small problem. I know. But in other words, what I'm going to do is that I'm going to create the hekdesh now, and it will take place when? After I buy it back. But your declaration was being made when? You mamish have no bailus over that property. Now, does that work? The answer, of course, is no. If I can't do something currently right now, so then I can't create a delayed effect at a later point in time. Good. Perfect. Even though at a later point in time, I will be in ownership of it. Good. So after I'm in ownership, I want to create hekdesh by all means. But I can't create the hekdesh now and have the effect delayed at a later point in time when I own it. Because currently right now, I can't do anything. And isn't that more comparable to the case of the woman? Where the woman says regarding her hands, I'm going to be makdish my maisi adayim now. Right now, I don't own my hands. Now, again, it's not, even as I say that, so it's more subtle. Meaning she owns the guf of her hands. She doesn't own the peros of her hands. But still, if we're going to make a comparison, isn't that a better comparison? So maskubara papa. So here we go with now, I guess you can call this the third round. Midami, that's not comparable. Gabi zvina psika milsa, the gabi isha mi psika milsa. So I don't understand when it comes to the land that I already sold. So psika milsa, meaning what connection do I have to the land currently right now? Zero. Meaning when I sold the land has no sheiches to me. I don't own the gufa davar. I don't own the perisa davar. And you're going to compare that to a woman and a relationship with a woman in her hands? Currently right now, she owns the gufa davar. She just doesn't own the perisa davar. It's not comparable. So halo dami ala. So here we go now with another comparison, another attempt at comparison. Ala, the comparison is laomer lechaver. So this is shemishkanti lecha lecheshe epadenu mimcha taktish mi lo kadusha. So over here it'd be a little bit more like a mashkan. Okay. So what I did is I collateralized my property, but because I'm indebted to somebody and he wanted security, so what I did is I created my property as a lien. But more than just a lien, in other words, I specifically designated this particular property against the loan. Okay, basically, it's what we do when we borrow against our house. In other words, we're not simply saying that my property, but in other words, we are specific to which particular property. So over here now, so I am now collateralizing my property against a loan, and I say the following. I want to be makdish my property. Somebody has a lien on that property. Okay. But who owns the property? I own the property. Now, but and at the very same time, somebody is holding a lien against that property. Okay, good. Now we're working with a good comparison. Meaning that's very similar to the case of the woman in her hands. Meaning the woman in her hands right now, who's the owner of those hands? She is. Who has the peros adavar? Who's got a shibun on those hands? The husband. So now we're much closer to a fair comparison between the property and the woman. So the Gemara says, now in the case of the property, so let's say I make the following declaration. While the land now is mortgaged, so can I be makdish the property? And here's what I say. Meaning I know somebody right now has got a lien on that property, but when I redeem, when I pay back my debt, and I release the lien off that property, so I'm going to be makdish it. Meaning again, he's affecting the hekdesh now. He's declaring the declaration of hekdesh is now for a later point in time when I am poda. So does it work? The answer is yes, it works. So the Gemara says, now that's comparable to the case of the woman in her hands. Right? And if it works in the case of the mortgage property, so for sure it should work in the case of the woman in her hands. So maskev l'rev shisha b'rei d'rev edi. Okay, I lost count in terms of how many rounds we're in right now. But here, once again, the comparison's going to fall apart. So the Gemara says you have to take another factor into consideration. And this is the reason why the comparison's not good. Because please consider that when it comes to a person and the releasing of his lien, who controls the release of his lien? He does. In other words, at any point in time, he could just simply pay off the loan and he could release a lien. And it's totally within his control. So when I, the landowner, who somebody else right now has a lien on that property, when I make the declaration now that upon releasing the lien, I'm going to be makdish, in other words, he's declaring it now, and the effect should be after the lien is released, but it's within my control to do it at any point in time. It's biyado. So over there, because I have control of when that lien is going to be released, so therefore I could create the hekdesh now. Again, when I say create the hekdesh, I mean make the declaration now, even though the effect is going to be delayed, but because everything is within my control, I could do it right now. But when it comes to the woman and her hands, so again, the comparison is pretty, it's better, it's a better comparison. However, when is she able to release the lien of her husband? And the answer, of course, is she has no control over it. Meaning it will be released, but only upon divorce. And she cannot dictate when the divorce is going to be. Okay. So as much as we are closer to a comparison, the comparison is still imperfect. So halo dami ala, the omer la omer chaver sadezer shemashkanti lach, Esther shanim lecheshabdenu mimcha takdish mi lo kadosha. So the Gemara tries one more time. And that is, how about that I know that the land is going to be mortgaged to you for 10 years. So for 10 years, I'm not within the ability to go ahead and release the lien. Okay, fine. And under those circumstances, now I want to be makdish now, knowing that there will be a release of the lien, but not at any point in time that I want. I'm going to have to wait 10 years. After the 10 years are up and after I release the lien, is the land going to be hektish? The answer is going to be yes. Isn't that now comparable to the case of the woman? Now, immediately, if you're following, if you're really holding, if I'm explaining this well, immediately you recognize, again, the comparison is going to fall short. So, maskal ravashi midami hasam kits, isha mi isle kitsusa. So the Gemara says the comparison, this helped the comparison, but not by much. In fact, it really doesn't help. Because at least in the 10-year loan, in the 10-year lien, so at least you know that after 10 years are up, so the lien is going to be released. You can exercise the right to release the lien after 10 years. So in other words, it's a fixed determined time in which the lien is going to come to an end. However, in the case of the woman, so when is her lien going to end? Well, you don't know. In other words, the marriage could work. That could happen. So it's an indeterminate amount of time. She doesn't have control in terms of when that time is going to come to an end. So the Gemara says it's really not a fair comparison. Okay. And that is Amud Aleph of today's daf. We're up to the Amud Beis and we're almost done. So what we try to do is the following. In other words, we're saying now that Shmuel's of the position that Eina Demakdish Davar Shelo B'Olam, and that's evident by the fact that Shmuel in that Brayso and Ksuva says that what happens when a husband is Makdish the Adayim of his wife, so nothing happens in terms of the base amount, so that belongs to her. In terms of the Mosar, that's a Davar Shelo B'Olam, and therefore he can't be Makdish. Good. All right, that's and Shmuel's of that position. He subscribes to Rav Yochanan Sandler in Eina Demakdish Davar Shelo B'Olam. The sticking point, of course, is our Mishnah, because in our Mishnah, what happened? She's making a neder and she's saying that I'm ostering my Maisa Yadayim on you, the husband. So fine. So she makes that declaration, and Rav Yochanan Ben Nuri in our Mishnah is of the position that he should be made for it. Why? Because of the eventuality of divorce. Okay. In other words, if there is going to be a divorce later on, so then the neder is going to kick in, and so therefore he should be made for it now. And that, of course, is all predicated on a person can be makdish davar shelo b'olam. In other words, she doesn't have her hands yet, and yet she can affect a neder that will take place for the future. So the makdish davar shelo b'olam, and Shmuel says in the halachas like Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. And how can that be when we're trying to establish a Shmuel's of the position that ain the makdish davar shelo b'olam? And what we try to do for the Amud Aleph of today's daf is draw a comparison between the case of a property that you don't fully own, and yet you could be makdish it now for a later point in time, because you still right now currently have ownership on that property, and you could release a lien at any point in time. So the Gemara says, oh, that may be true, but that's not comparable to the case of the woman, because in the case of the woman, she currently right now does not own the payrus of her hand. And in terms of when the husband Sheba is going to be released, it's not within her control. And so therefore, it's not a good comparison. So to reset the Gemara's question, it really is very simple. How can Shmuel subscribe to the view of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri of our Mishnah, who says that the husband needs to be mefer because of the future? That's the future. We're assuming is what Shmuel's position is. Okay. So Elam Ravashi. So here we are now turning to the Amud Beis. So Ravashi is going to give an answer, and it's a fundamental answer. Elam Ravashi Shani Konamas Techi Kedusha Saguf Dami. So as far as Konamas are concerned, Konamas are comparable to Kedusha Saguf. Okay. And so let's go. Let's get involved in a fundamental answer. We've heard this a number of times throughout Shas. And so it's in the Gemara in Pesachim, it's the Gemara here, and I'm sure it's in other places as well. I'm sure. So the it goes like this. So we know that when it comes to, I'm just giving a quick background to help us understand, appreciate what Rav Ashi is introducing us to. When it comes to being makdish something, so hektish can be divided into two categories. There's what's called Kedushas Damim, and there's what's called Kedushas Aguf. Kedushas Damim is, let's say, for example, this chair that's right next to me, or the chair that's underneath me, whatever. I could take any item and be makdish that item. And being makdish that item now means that the item now belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, what is the Beis HaMikdash interested in this chair? They're not interested in this chair. They're interested in the value of the chair. What the Beis HaMikdash is then going to turn around and do is that they're going to sell the chair, right? They're going to be poed to the chair, and it'll serve as a revenue stream, a source of revenue for the Beis HaMikdash. But in other words, but before they do that, this chair now has Kedusha. It's Kedusha's Damim. Okay, but that certainly means since the chair belongs to the Beis HaMikdash currently, anyone who misuses it, misappropriates it, is going to be in violation of Me'ilah, but nevertheless, that's what's called Kedushas Adamim. And then there's something called Kedushas HaGuf. Kedushas HaGuf is a carbon. I take a carbon, I'm makdish an animal for the purposes of a carbon, so that's Kedushas HaGuf. Now, the fundamental difference between Kedushas Damim and Kedushas Aguf is that when it comes to Kedushas Damim, it's redeemable. When it comes to Kedushas Aguf, it's not redeemable. I take an animal, and I'm makdish the animal as a carbon. That is it. Or let's say I want to try to redeem the animal. Nope, not unredeemable. Now, yes, it's true. If the animal develops a blemish, you can redeem it then. And but in other words, any time before blemish, you simply cannot redeem it. Okay. So what the Gemara now is suggesting is the following. Rav Ashi is suggesting is that when you make a konam, now a konam is a neder, but in other words, in the neder, what you're declaring is that this item is going to be usur to so and so. In other words, either to yourself or to somebody else. So a konam. So you know which category we're going to put it under. We're going to put it under the category of kedushas haguf. Now, in of itself, by the way, that in of itself is that's a chiddush. That is a novel idea. That a konam now is going to file under Kedushas Aguf. So already that's a chiddush, but once we accept that chiddush, and Rav Ashi is asserting that's the way to say it. So now that's going to answer our question. How is that going to answer our question? So we have to read a couple more lines of Gemara. Uchid Rava. Because what you have are shibud breakers, lien breakers. There are three things that will break a lien. Okay, now for all the lenders in the room, I know there are a couple here. So for all the lenders in the room, this is information that's not going to make you happy, but there are three things that are just simply going to break a lien. And let's go over all three things. Number one, hektish. So hektish over here means the following. So let's say I borrow money from you and you're a little bit unsure in terms of whether or not I'm going to pay you back or not pay you back. So I say, no problem whatsoever, right? You see my trusted animal over here? You see this cow? This cow will now secure the loan. And in fact, I'm telling you right now, in other words, we're going to write it up in the shtar that this cow, we'll call it an apotiki. In other words, we're assigning this particular animal as security against the loan. So good. So now there's a shibud on that animal. And then after I borrow the money, so now what happens is that I decide, you know what? Time for me to bring a carbon. I turn to my trusty animal and I say that this animal now is going to be hektish. It's going to be a carbon. What happens to the lien? Breaks the lien. It's a lien breaker. Now that's true by Kedushas Aguf. It's not true by Kedushas Damim. All right, the Ran over here writes it, B'Shem Rashi. Okay, that in of itself is...
How can you give something hektish and you technically don't
So in other words, so what I'm going to say is that you do own it. It's not what I'm saying. It's what the Gemara is saying. It's what Rav is saying. Rav is saying is that you do own it. Somebody has a lien on it, but you own it. Under normal circumstances, I anticipated. Baruch Hashem. I'm so happy I anticipated. So I understand. In other words, Murray, I understand. You have a lien on that animal. We wrote it up. You have a lien on that animal. Good. So Hektish is one example where it breaks a lien. It's Meshabbat the lien. Now, obviously, you still are owed the money. And in terms of now looking for other items to secure against the loan. So in other words, there will be other items that he belongs to that's going to secure the loan. But you wrote up a lien on that particular animal. Okay, I get it.
Is the value of your lien against that animal? Let's say that animal is superior, and now you made it hectic.
Yeah.
He breaks the lien. Did they go by the value of the value of that animal specifically because that's the animal?
Yeah, in other words, that animal was designated as the security of the loan. It's an apotiki.
Whatever value that was.
Whatever value it is. Okay, so that's one. Two, a second thing that's going to break a lien is, I'm following the order of the Gemara. A second thing is going to be chametz. Okay. So you have expensive bottles of whiskey in your house. And you could definitely tell I'm not a drinker. I don't know what I'm talking about. So anyway, you have expensive bottles of whiskey in your house, and you want to borrow money. And you're like, look, here's my liquor cabinet. We'll write it up. In other words, and this will serve as a security against a loan. And again, a potiki. In other words, you're assigning your liquor cabinet as your lien. And now what happens? Pesach comes. Now, this didn't come as a surprise to anybody, right? Every year, it's on the calendar. So Pesach comes, and now it's chametz. And what happens now? The Isser chametz breaks the lien. Now, of course, you don't own it anymore because that's what the Isser chametz does. It removes your ownership of it, but it also breaks the lien as well. Okay. So that's another lien breaker. And the third lien breaker is going to be shechor. And that is that, let's say what I secure against the loan is my Eved Kenani. I own an Eved Kenani. And so now, he's got an appraised value and I use him as security against the loan. And again, a potiki, I write it up. So specifically this particular Eved Kenani. And then what happens is that I free him. The freeing of the Eved Kenani breaks the lien. Okay. So three things are going to break the lien. Now, it's fair to ask me, and I'm not sure I'm going to have a good answer, why these specific three? Why not other things as well? How do we arrive at these three? It's a fair question, and I don't know the answer, but that doesn't matter. For the purpose of, I mean, it matters, but for the purpose of the discussion, so now here's what we're saying. Rav Ashi says that you know what a konim is tantamount to? Kedushas Haguf. And do you know what Rava taught us? Rava taught us that when it comes to Kedushas Haguf, Hektish, a karban, it's Mafkia Midei Shibun, it breaks the Shibun. Now we have one more point that we need to make, and the Gemara makes it. Ihachi lama li shema yigarshenu, tanid va'o shema yigarshenu. Okay, now the girsa over here at the end of the sugya does require a little bit of editing, but I'm going to explain the end of the Gemara according to the Ran, like we do every day. And that is the following. And that is that, okay, so here's what we're saying. Her hands that she currently now is being, she's making a neder on her hands. A konam, that these hands are not going to be benefited by my husband. My husband's got to lean on these hands. So what did we just learn together? Konam is equivalent to Kedushas Haguf. We know that Kedushas Haguf is mafkia midei shibud, it breaks the shibud. Oh. So that means now that when she makes such a konam, so now these hands now are hers. Meaning again, in terms of kinyan haguf, they were always hers. But even in terms of kinyan haperos now, they're hers. Oh. Now, the part that needs clarification is, okay, and take all that and bring it back to the Mishnah. Insert that into the Mishnah. Because Shmuel says, halacha is like Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. But here's the problem. The problem is obvious. And that is, what did the Mishnah, what did Rav Yochanan ben Nuri actually say? He says, when do these hands now become usher? When does the neder kick in? Post-divorce. What? What do you mean post-divorce? Meaning, if we're subscribing to Rava, and if we're subscribing to Rav Ashi, and that the konam is tantamount to Kedushas Haguf, and Kedushas Haguf breaks the Shibud, so when should the hands be hers? Effective? Immediately. And why are we talking about post-divorce? Huh. So the way the Ron explains it is as follows, is that, and the Ron says, by the way, in other words, this entire sugya that we're doing over here is also found in the Gemara in Ksuvos, and the Ron's insistent that it's the same sugya. So in other words, if you remember the Gemara in Ksuvos, so, and our sugya over here, same punchline. And that is that, here's what the Chachamim did. Meaning, even though I accepted Rav Ashi, and even though I accepted Rava, and even though our hands now fundamentally belong to her, but what the Chachamim did is they turned up the husband's shibud just a little bit extra. Normally, Hekdesh breaks the shibud. It's a lien breaker, normally. But what the Chachamim did is that within the framework of marriage, and the husband has a shibud, so that shibud is going to be turned up just a little bit. What does that mean? What in the world do I mean? So, number one, I'm not totally sure. the way the Ron says it over is that, yes, it's true. Fundamentally, now the hands do in fact belong to her, both in terms of guf and in terms of peros. Fundamentally, that's true. But now now because she's married and because the Chachamim dialed up his shibud just a little bit, so in other words, his shibud will maintain through the duration of the marriage, even though the hands fundamentally are hers, but the Chachamim allowed him to retain the shibud at least through the termination of the marriage, through the conclusion of the marriage. But once the marriage is over, so then her hands, which were fundamentally hers now anyway, now are going to be hers. It's not a davar shelo bala olam because the hands currently right now, as she makes a neder, is in fact belong to her. I'm going to read it inside in the Ron v'yishlamer. The Kevin de Medina, you want to follow me in the Ran. It's the first very long line. V'yishlamer Kevin de Medina chayel, ilav da'amur rabban l'shibudei. It takes effect immediately, had it not been for the fact that the Chachamim just gave a little bit extra oomph to the shibud of the husband. So, ki amua hani mili d'chol hecha d'kai mekame lo yachol. But that's, of course, only while the marriage persists. Aval nizgarsha, but upon divorce, ki ilu chayel mi'ikara dami, Kevin de Medina Rai Lachol. But upon divorce, what happens is that her neder took place retroactive to the time that she made it. Because really, fundamentally, it actually took place at that point in time, had it not been for the extra strength, the extra oomph that the Chachamim gave to the shibud of the husband. Okay. And now, to make a really long story much shorter, and just summarize today's daf, so here's what happened. Shmuel holds what? You cannot render hektish to something that's not yet here. You cannot do that. As evidenced by the fact that Shmuel Paskin like Rav Yochanan HaSandler in that Brice and Ksuvos. Good. That's his position. He also tells us that the halach is like Rav Yochanan Ben Nuri. How do we wrap our heads around that? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you how you do it. The Gemara gave a lot of attempts to do so. But the conclusion of the Gemara, and which certainly seems to be where the Gemara is most satisfied and its landing place, is that when she's being makdish her actual hands, not the productivity, but her actual hands. In other words, currently she owns the guf, and now she is, by making the neder, she's making a konam on her, not only the guf adavar, but the peres as well. Okay. So that is what she's making the neder on. And it takes place effective immediately. It's not a davar shelo bala olam. It takes place effective immediately. If that's true, so then why does the Mishnah say ad she gershena? Why then only is it post divorce? So that's because what the Chachamim did is that they ratcheted up the shibud, even though hektesh normally is a lien breaker, but over here the Chachamim amped up the husband's shibud just a little bit so that his shibud is even going to be able to maintain, but only through the duration of the marriage. Once the marriage ends, so now her neder kicks in. Really, the way the Ron presents it, it kicked in at the time that she made the neder, because fundamentally, a neder is a shibud breaker. Rabbi.